This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
And as we segue to this very important issue in South Africa of child pregnancies being on the rise, let me say thank you very much for her patience, Cassandra Dorasami, who's a research and consultant at Amnesty International. Because Amnesty International South Africa launched a report, and they say that in recent years, there's been an increase in the number of adolescents and young girls becoming pregnant. Early pregnancy is now having ripple effects in terms of the adverse social impacts on schooling, on healthcare, and just on the, you know, the values of a society in which we live. And I think if ever there was an indictment on South Africa, this is what it is. Because Cassandra Dorasami, research consultant at Amnesty International South Africa, I even struggle to use the words child pregnancy. It feels like an oxymoron, as it were. These are children. They shouldn't be pregnant in the first place.
Good morning, Lerato, and thank you so much for having me. And I absolutely agree with you. It is a huge indictment on our society. And if we just look at those figures, you mentioned the 48.7% increase in early pregnancies, and that's for children with between the ages of 10 and 14. And it's a huge shock, because when you look at the law says that children under the age of 12 cannot consent to sex, which means that a large proportion of that is rape, if not statutory rape. For children under the age of 12, that would be rape. And I just want to make that clear from the outset. Sorry, if I may just go through the other stats.
Before you do that, Cassandra, sorry, you've just said something that just set me back. So let's just define rape again. When is it statutory rape and when is it just rape?
Sure. So the law provides for consensual sex between children between the ages of 12 and 15.
It does?
And then for, yes. But this is just between children for this age bracket. And that's because prior to this law, children between these ages would be guilty of rape if they were having consensual sex between each other, at least statutory rape. So statutory rape laws have evolved to recognize that there is some developing agency amongst adolescents. Teenagers are developing capacity to make decisions about their body, they're exploring, and they need safe education and tools to be able to have that conversation amongst themselves. And I'll get into that a bit later when
you're
talking about
some blown of the solutions. Our mind.
Right. But just to also make clear that anyone over the ages of 18 who are having sex with children between these ages would be guilty of statutory rape if it is consensual, or rape purely if it is not, obviously. But it's just good to make those distinctions and to have that clarity in the law.
Thank you. Please continue.
Sure. Thank you. And yes, so picking up on the stats, so we saw in 2020 that there were 2,665 girls between the ages of 10 and 14 who had given birth. And between the ages of 15 and 19, there were 91,580 girls. So we use the term early pregnancy to incorporate the two age that stats are reported on, and that's 10 to 14 and 15 to 19. And then again, between April 2021 and March 2022, we saw that there were 90,037 girls who had given birth between the ages of 10 and 19. So also to make another thing clear is that these are just births, and they don't account for the full scale of the pregnancy problem, because it doesn't account for miscarriages or termination of pregnancy and all these other factors. This is just births. So this is an understatement.
Yeah. So tell us about the social consequences. We can imagine them, but just tell us in real terms how a child's life changes once they become pregnant, and even their health.
Yes. So just speaking to it first, looking at education and unemployment, the teen pregnancy has contributed to girls specifically dropping out of school as a consequence. And what happens is that girls then don't return to school in the late stages of pregnancy or after giving birth. And that can perpetuate a cycle of poverty and then unemployment. So we see poverty as a dual factor here. We see poverty as a contributing factor to early pregnancies and a consequence of early pregnancies. And that can have, and teenage pregnancy itself can have a large negative impact on livelihoods and, future outcomes for the child and for the mother themselves. Then we see social consequences, looking at stigma, rejection, violence by family and community members, as well as early marriage in some instances. So in addition to having to bear, a child, girls are undergoing stigma and not getting the support that they need from their community. And then lastly, just looking at the health consequences, research shows that the younger the girl, the greater the health risk. And globally, maternal conditions are the top causes of death and disability among 15 to 19-year-olds. That's a huge stat. And early pregnancy can also be an indicator for risky and unprotected sex, with the possibility of contracting STIs and HIV. And then lastly, just adolescent girls and young women have the highest rates of HIV in South Africa.
What is known about the fathers of these babies, or what is known about the partners, rather, of these girls? And I'm struggling with the terminology partner, and you're talking about a child. But anyway, what's known about who impregnated these girls?
Unfortunately, not much is known because most of these births are registered without the father. And it makes it very difficult then to say what the circumstances of each of these cases are. And it is, again, like a huge indictment on society, because we need to be able to break down the figures, to break down the stats, and to know why this crisis is the way it is. And at the moment, we know that GBV and rape is one of the causes. And then we also see that one of the other causes being a lack of sexuality education, and girls not understanding, girls and boys, and all children not understanding the consequences of sex and how to practice safe sex. And of course, also not having access to contraceptives, and those factors playing a huge contributing role to the stats that we're seeing at the moment.
The reason I'm asking this is we assume, when you hear about childhood pregnancy, we assume, one, it is rape and not in the various sort of definitions you've given to us. And we assume it's an older boy or man. Are we making fair assumptions here? Because some people have actually said on social media, no, these are teen boys getting teen girls pregnant in the main.
So unfortunately, we can't say from the stats and figures, and it's a glaring gap in the data, and we need to be able to say. I think it is incredibly important that we do figure out the circumstances under which these pregnancies occur. And I think that's why we're having a broad conversation about all of the contributing factors, because at the end of the day, we want to be able to protect the girl child and ensure their bright future. And we want all children to be educated on their rights and on, safe sex, and being able to develop their capacity and agency in a safe and informed way.
So what we do know, because I mean we've all been children before, is those adolescence years, teenage years are naughty years, right? We're experimenting with a lot of things. I, for one, used to steal my parents' alcohol and from their liquor cabinet, right? And put it in a Coca-Cola bottle and would go and drink it with our friends and see what effect it's going to have. So children are naughty by nature. And part of that era of exploration and discovery is discovering your body. For the first time, you've got boobs, you're getting a period, you've got an Adam's apple as a boy. Perhaps you're having sexual feelings and wet dreams and the like. And so, as you're saying, there is an element at which the behavior of a 12-year-old, 13, 14-year-old, 15-year-old within their circle might not be rape. It might be, if they're having sex, it might be exploring amongst themselves. So it's a very fine line, but this is where the sexual education element comes in. And in African communities that are largely conservative, parents are uncomfortable having these conversations about changing bodies, social behavior, alcohol use, etc. So kids are just going to the streets and learning through trial and error. How can we address that?
I think you've painted the picture quite adequately there, where it's a huge society and a state problem. Because the state does play a role in this and has a responsibility to create an enabling environment for people to make autonomous and informed decisions. And part of this is also eliminating harmful stereotypes and discrimination, and destigmatizing adolescent pregnancy. So we're not putting burden of stigma on young girls. And also, at a state level, again, implementing age appropriate and good quality comprehensive, sexuality education. That education to be delivered by well-trained teachers, because research has shown that this improved knowledge decreases risk-taking and improves attitudes towards the use of condoms. So education from the state and the state playing a role in facilitating comprehensive sexuality education is hugely important. But I think you're right in that communities, parents, everyone plays a role in making, in having this conversation, and in, raising children who are informed about their rights and can make these decisions safely. It is a taboo topic, and it's something that I don't know, we need to, stick it out and have that conversation no matter how uncomfortable it is.
And even if they, pass on the responsibility to the school, to the state, as it were, the state is also in a precarious position because some parents might say, why are you teaching my children values that I'm not willing or that I don't subscribe to, or sexual education that I believe my child is not yet at the mature age to be receptive of it? I don't allow the school to do this on my behalf.
Yes, it is quite a tricky situation, and I think if there's one thing to say about that is that we need to look at the stats. We need to look at these early pregnancies, and we need to realize that children at that age are becoming curious. And if we're not going to play a role in making sure that they are informed, and can make the right decisions, then they're going to, like you said, learn by trial and error. And we don't want that. Parents need to be strong enough to say that we don't want that, and we need to be able to have to treat and see children as people who are developing the capacity to think for themselves. It's not that they turn 18 and suddenly they can make decisions for themselves. It's a process of learning.
But there's also the issue of this, the non-negotiable, unequivocal application of the law. If a boy or a man over 16 has impregnated a girl who's 12, 13, or 14, it is statutory rape. It doesn't matter if they were friends, they were exploring. You should throw the book at them because South Africa, with its gender-based violence problem, has a serious sexual violence problem because we're also not prosecuting sexual crimes in the way in which we should. And so some people will latch on to definitions as a way of absolving themselves or not taking responsibility. There needs to be, in as much as education is important, shouldn't there also be the enforcement of the law?
Yes, absolutely, 100%. And it needs to start with the stage of reporting and children being able to report when they are violated, and to know that that the cases they report will be treated and investigated seriously. But like you said, we have huge issues with the criminal justice system and enforcing the law. And improving on that criminal justice system is really important to dealing with this crisis that we're facing. And yes, it isn't just a matter of latching onto definitions. It's about understanding what free and informed consent looks like.
And finally, Cassandra Dorasamy, are there any international best practices where countries have struggled with this issue and then managed to turn the corner?
Yes, one of the best practices that we see works is comprehensive sexuality education. Because that allows children to make those informed decisions, to access contraceptives, and to be able to exercise their agency in an informed way. So that is one of the major tools that we can use to stem the tide, in addition to what you say about improving the criminal justice system and dealing with the fact that we live in a very violent society against women and children.
Yeah, because there was an era, especially early 90s, late 80s, when Britain was really struggling with this issue and they had the highest teen pregnancy rate in all of Europe. And I think that has changed significantly. And perhaps that's one of those experiences that can be looked at to see what happened. And as you say, comprehensive sex education, being open in our discussions with our children about what sexuality is, the changing of your body, your rights, what consent actually looks like, and when a child really feels violated, supporting them in the process of reporting it and following it through all the way to prosecution. Cassandra Dorasamy there, a research consultant at Amnesty International South Africa, which says the incidence of teen and child pregnancies in South Africa has gone up by 48.7%. If ever there was an indictment on South Africa, this is the one.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.